This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? Welcome, showrunners, to episode number 36 of the Showrunner Podcast. I am your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital, and I am joined, as always, by Defender of Humanity, host of Hack the Entrepreneur, and now the face of Hack the Entrepreneur, the official face, as if he was not that already, Johnny Nastor. Johnny, how you doing? You wide awake and spry today? Ready to go?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for hours.
I bet you have.
It's gonna be great. Yeah.
Yes.
So the face. Let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
So the face. You point out the face of Hack the Entrepreneur.
Yes.
So this was a point of contention. So anybody who doesn't know, which is probably all of you, I redid the artwork for my show Hack the Entrepreneur. The original artwork lasted for 14 months, I guess, since launch, and I had it done on Fiverr, and it was done in a couple days, and it was literally just like a yellow background with red text and a little tiny logo, and it worked great. But then now I get access to these amazing designers through Rainmaker FM, so there was a new artwork created. And there was three variations originally created, one without my face still, and then two, one with half my face and one with totally my face. Most people really liked the one with my face, but Jared really didn't. Jared was really against having my face on the artwork.
That is not an accurate representation of what I said.
What?
I said, that is not an accurate representation of what I said. I was merely being the useful devil's advocate.
You were the first one to point out why it shouldn't be there.
Yes.
I guess is more accurate. And it actually got into an interesting discussion. So between the Showrunner Facebook group, my Hack the Entrepreneur Facebook group, general friends on Facebook, I asked so many people and got great feedback. And most people really, really just were like gravitated right towards the one with my full face on it. I mean, it's beautiful artwork. Like, he did amazing work. So I went with that one, but it was interesting. It was interesting to give the get the feedback from audience and people who aren't even my audience, just people who are into podcasts or who just in generally like hang around the internet. So they see a lot of stuff like that. So it was really like some people would just be like, yeah, I love that one. Other people would nitpick it so close. Like, the little tiny bit of font here is terrible. I had one person cut it up and like rearrange it in ways and stuff. And wow. It was interesting. It was an interesting, because I actually didn't even think to do that. It was like, as soon as I got them, I just like, we have a Slack channel open for the three guys in my mastermind group. And I just dropped it to them and they like instantly gave me, like, they were like instantly like that one, like to whichever one they said. And then they're like, you got to ask like your groups. And I was like, oh wow, how did I not even think about that? And then I did it like right before dinner on like the Wednesday night or Thursday night. And then it was like hundreds of responses. I was like, oh my goodness. And so I'm like trying to eat dinner, but also like on Facebook responding to people, getting sort of dirty looks from across the table.
it's a fun thing to provide feedback for. That's why I think it's a great way to engage your audience, because it includes them in an important decision. You know, it's a fun thing to give feedback for. And, it's cool all around. And I think you made the right choice. I wanted to present the devil's advocate view, because I think it is an important decision if you're going to put your face on your artwork, because you are, in a sense, making yourself the face of your show. And that's an important decision. And I thought for you, like I said, you had earned that. And the artwork is fantastic. Thanks. So well done.
Thank you. I think that that's the key, though, right, is that I feel like I've earned it too. I think if I would have had that artwork, even though it's like from a design perspective, it's 1,000 times better than my last artwork, I don't think it would have worked the same if I had launched like that. Because I don't think I was the face of my show 14 months ago. I don't think I had earned it at that point. But now 150 episodes in, I think I do.
I think so.
So Yeah, so that was interesting. It was, and you're right, it is fun to give feedback on because, and plus, I mean, those designs, they were all great. He's an amazing designer, right? So it was like, yeah. wasn't like, oh, you got to scrap all these and go for something completely different. It was three really good pieces of art, all just totally different. So,
and the big point, here is for the showrunner listeners, 114 episodes from now, just wait till you see our goofy faces on the showrunner artwork. It's coming.
Yeah, there we go. Both of our faces looking at each other.
And on that note, let's go to the main topic. So, Johnny, today's main topic is, it's a listener question that we're actually taking from the showrunner huddle that we did a couple of weeks ago. And this is a question from Jason Norris, and he asked basically what, and he was asking me what I had learned by podcasting every day, because for a while there, I did 80 straight episodes of Primality Primer. I had to cut it back. And in fact, I had to suspend episodes for about a month. When this airs, I may have restarted them again. But it was just one of those things where life just got in the way and something had to be cut. And that was what got cut. But he asked, you know, what I had learned podcasting every day, which I thought ended up getting us into a pretty interesting conversation, and I thought that would make for an interesting topic for today's episode. What do you think? You want to tackle that?
Yeah, let's tackle it.
So I think the place to start, when you talk about podcasting every day, and I mean, Johnny, you put out three episodes a day, and a lot of times you're batching those together, so it probably feels, you know, like three episodes a week. Yeah, sorry, right. Yeah, slacker.
you know, so lazy now. Yeah.
And so I'm sure I know, because we talk about it, that you have days and you have certain weeks that are a lot busier than others. And I think what you really learn when you're podcasting every day, or when you're doing more than once a week, where you have a really busy schedule, is the importance of processes and templates and really getting everything down to where you're shaving off the seconds. Because, yeah, if you're just doing one episode a month or whatever, if it takes you a little bit longer, it's not that big a deal. But on a daily basis, those seconds, those minutes really add up. And so for me, not a generally process system-oriented guy, it was a great lesson in the importance of that. And I was really able to develop some great systems that have helped me in other shows. So, for example, having a GarageBand template that is so simple that all I have to do is drop the audio in there, drag my bumper music, and it's done, right? And that's a pretty standard one. Others were using a text expander, right? So templating the blog post and having that all ready to go. So all I had to do was fill in, you know, the specific part for that day, the 100 to 200 words to describe the episode, but having a text expander so that when I went in, I could just type a quick line, everything would fill in, and I would just have to type in the part that was changing. Plus, just being able to come up with ideas, right? Being smart about using Evernote to catalog ideas, to organize ideas, because when you're doing a show every single day, obviously, you know, there comes a point where it starts to become a little bit difficult to come up with your ideas. And so making sure that you're cataloging your ideas anytime that they come up and having a way to organize them and access them quickly, all of those for me were just from a process organization standpoint, which I'm always trying to get better at, that really helped me out. And so when I think back to that 80-day run of episodes with Primarily Primer, I think that's the most important thing I learned. Now, there are other lessons, of course, but I think to me, that's the most important thing that I learned. Johnny, what, you know, from your more intense weeks doing Hack the Entrepreneur, when you've done many, many episodes in a week, what do you think have been some of the benefits and some of the lessons you've learned from just having that process go on?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it without the process, and I wouldn't have the processes if I didn't do it, if that makes sense.
Indeed.
Because if I was doing one a week, there would just be no, because I talk to people who even have 100 episodes under their belt, and like they still have this scattered system, because you kind of can. What's the law? What's the person's name? Where like, the work you have to do will fill whatever time that you allot it, right? Which is absolutely true. And so if I have a third the amount of time that anyone else does, I have to do things three times as fast. It's just how I have to do it, which is great because it's really annoying and more laborious. Before I got sort of systematized and process oriented in the process, I didn't enjoy it as much. Because I would get bogged down with like figuring out like the intro, like how the intro was going to sound, and then how like I was going to make it kind of different, and then how I was going to do, I don't know, just like the editing part or any, I guess the promotion part after. All of it was just like, I get to a part and it's like, oh man, this is like so many different things I have to do. And I would just kind of grab different pieces of it and do it in a haphazard way. And it would take me an hour and a half to do something that now takes me like 6 minutes. Although I always thought I was really, really against like processes and stuff, because it's like, well, the reason why I have my own business is so I don't have to do that kind of stuff. I don't have to be structured, and you know what I mean? That's kind of what I think in the back of my head, until you get them. And until I made this realization a couple years ago that no matter how disjointed something is that you do, everything that you do in your life has a process to it. It's usually just you haven't analyzed, like stepped back from that process, looked at it, written it down. And so it's complete chaos. Like the way I make coffee in the morning, even though I use a Keurig machine, is probably so backwards because it's a process that I haven't actually written out and been like, why do I do that before I do that? Like, why do I put the cup onto the machine before I start trying to pour the cream in underneath the thing? But I do it every day. It's just something I do. You know what I mean? So processes always scared me because I thought they were something big and huge that you have to kind of create, but you don't. You just have to kind of optimize them. You write down exactly what it is you do, which you have to obviously do something. Whether it's publishing an episode, you do some sort of steps and you probably habitually do them in the same sort of way.
Yeah.
It just, until you write it down, then look at it from like a distance, be like, wow, that's completely ridiculous. Why do I do it like that? And then switch some parts around. Then it's like, oh, that makes more sense. And then you have an optimized process and you can continue to optimize it from then. And a process just really means, it doesn't even have to be written down, but it's, you have these processes anyways. And so I do, because I mean, I have a VA that does a lot of stuff for me. I have a writer that writes my intros for me, and I have an editor that does the editing for me, and I have a graphic design company that does all my graphics for me for each episode. And all of those parts have to have a process for each one so that I don't have to go and verify that that artwork was done exactly right before it's published. And that was, it just, that would, it would defeat the purpose of me trying to scale in any way if I had to actually check on each part. But it's got a process. So if I go back and do see something is wrong a week later, it's like, well, the process fell apart somewhere.
Yeah.
And so we can fix it. It's just one of those things where it's essential. I mean, even down to that gentleman, Jason, who emailed us yesterday.
Yeah.
He's like a Twitter friend that we talk on Twitter all the time. He's always asking questions. And he was like, tweeted me on the weekend. He was like, John, I hear you're talking about your interview sheets. I've been making my interview sheets available for download to my listeners. Like, and it's this PDF that I created like last October or something, because I was literally doing it with a blank piece of paper, which most people do when they're taking notes during an interview or something. And it was just complete gibberish and it didn't make any sense. And then I would have to go back through my whole episode and try and pull out like the hack, try and pull out what the resources were that they talked about so I could put them in show notes. And it was completely crazy. It's like, wow, I'm basically doing this whole thing twice now. So I just created a very basic PDF. Well, it's kind of elaborate, but it's got every point that I would ever need to document during the thing, and I can just write numbers into places and then I know where to go back. And so it was funny because Jason, I sent mine to him, he's like, whoa. And then he's like, I'm embarrassed to send you mine now. And then he sent it and it was like, there it is, just a piece of paper chicken scratched. But if you're only doing one episode, so it's that whole cart before the horse. So I don't think that you can get optimized if you don't kind of push yourself, or you can, but it's harder because you're not forced into it. But I still think that it's essential. I think you'll run a better show the more process oriented you get, and the less you have to focus on the jobs you have to do and the tasks that have to get done, because the tasks are the part that are typically boring and where we get hung up, where we don't publish on time because just like, oh, I don't want to do the blog post today, or I don't want to do this. this. It's like, well, the more you can kind of take the thinking out of that and just like, it just has to be done like this and like this and like this, the better, the more likely you are to stay on your schedule, put out a better show, and provide just better value to your audience. Because really, it's the show itself that's the value, right? But it gets hung up, and that's the part we all enjoy. We love the interviews, but then there's so many moving parts around it that you have to take control of, or else your audience doesn't get the benefit of listening to your show, and possibly at all, because most people, I think if I really look at it, is they quit because there's so much work around having a good show. It's not just sitting down with a friend or with somebody recording. There's really just so much else to it. Or you can completely just like not do it fully and just like make your show title just the person's name you're talking to and not put dates on things and not really do show notes. Those kind of things. Like, well, yeah, you could do that too, but it's also not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah. And I mean, I love what you said about process there. And I've also learned that with what we're doing over at the Assembly Call, because we've hired interns for the third straight season. And this year, we're really getting the interns involved in, you know, doing the pre-production, getting the show set up, doing the post-production afterwards. And that's a lot of stuff that I've just always done. And so I've had to go through and, you know, write out checklists and do tutorial videos to show them, you know, all the different processes. And it's interesting because the first time I do the video, I always end up scrapping it because I was like, crap, all right, that's not the best way to do this. Like, let me go back. There's totally a better way to do this. So then I'll go redo the video. And it's made it much more efficient for when I do it. And of course, it's made it easier to communicate to them so they can do it. And that's the other great part about a process is it gets you ready for outsourcing. And I think at some point, if you're really going to take your show to the next level, you might outsource your, you know, the episode production or the show note production or the, you know, the post image, whatever it is. And the more that you have processes around that, the better that you're going to be. And so I think that's the real big one to me is just how much you have to get good at processes. Like, it forces you to do it when you're posting every day. You know, the other one I mentioned was the ideas. And not only cataloging ideas as you come up with them, as you think about them, as you find them, as you read them, as, you know, you overhear a conversation that sparks an idea, but it's also understanding that you can repurpose ideas, right? Like, you can take the same idea and maybe say it in a different way. And I think what's nice about a daily show is typically if you're going to do a daily show, you're probably not doing an hour every day, right? Like, you're probably doing something shorter form. Like, when Damien was doing Rough Draft, it was, you know, 6 to 10 minutes. The Primality Primers, 6 to 10 minutes. A lot of daily shows are shorter. And so I think it challenges you to get better at explaining one single concise idea in a succinct way. You know, taking an idea, really explaining it in a way that you can get it in those 6 to 10 minutes, and you realize, okay, I explained idea X over here. There may be a slight variation of this that I can explain, and it'll hit people in a different way. And that's one of the things that I learned is I would, you know, take a similar idea in different episodes and it would totally strike a different nerve with different people. And that was interesting because, you know, we think, okay, we've probably the first time that we cover an idea, it's the way that it makes the most sense to us. And we kind of, it's almost like we have a little check mark in our brains and we check that off and okay, now we've got to move on to the next idea. But not, again, if you're doing a daily show, you're building a vast archive, right? You're going through a lot of content at once. And probably, like with all shows, you're turning over your audience. And so you're getting new listeners. They may not have heard that episode. It was only 6 weeks ago to you, but that's like 40 episodes back. You know, so you can bring an idea back. And I'm not saying rebroadcast, but maybe even tweak it a little bit, put a different spin on it, find a different quote that illustrates it, you know, a different headline and a different intro. Like, there's a lot of different ways that you can do that and it still be useful. And so I think that, in addition to the challenge of the process, the challenge of ideas, because, you know, we talk about this with shows and why a lot of shows sprint out of the gates, but then struggle after they get to that 10 episode mark, after they get to that 25 episode mark. It's because a lot of us, if we've started a show, we've probably got several ideas just bursting out of us, right? That we just have to get out. And what makes you successful is what do you do after those ideas are out, right? And for some people, that's the 7 to 10 episode mark. For some people, it's the 25 episode mark. Well, you reach that mark really quickly when you're doing a daily show. So it immediately challenges the depth of your knowledge about whatever subject it is, because you've got to keep going and you've got to keep finding, you know, either new ideas or fresh takes on your old ideas to keep people engaged, to keep it fresh, to keep it moving forward. And that challenge from a content creator perspective is, it can be daunting, but it can also be very rewarding. And I think, again, it challenges not only your process of idea capture and categorization, but also just your ability to consistently communicate those ideas in a compelling way for folks. Johnny, and I want to talk about the benefits of actually doing these episodes live, too, because I think there's a special benefit you get from that. But any other big ideas that you can see coming from the challenge of a daily show?
No, I was going to move it to live because I was going to say the idea of like the velocity of having a daily show, and just having to figure out more content, having to figure out more guests, having to figure out more processes to make everything easier and to make everything work. It seems daunting until you get that momentum going, and then everything just kind of keeps itself going.
Yep.
So when you're standing still looking at somebody like myself, like doing three shows with Hack the Entrepreneur and one with Showrunner, and be like, whoa, I mean, I can barely do my one. It's like, it's not four times the work. It can't be. There's just no way. There's like, I could never humanly do it. Mm-hmm. It's probably 1.5 times the work, but also like 12 times the benefit. So it's essential to think about it that way. And so when we move to live shows, I think that the idea of doing a live show helps you sort of, I guess, give up or like relinquish control of so many things that I think stop us from really getting that sort of momentum going. The big one being editing of our ums and uhs and whatever noises we happen to make, mm-hmm. which I think slows so many of us down at the beginning. We all know that you're supposed to, we all have like so many hours of bad radio in us. Yet we don't want to admit it. We want to admit that everybody else does, but I don't think we want to admit that we do. And we absolutely do. You absolutely do. I absolutely do. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to get out of it soon, but it's just part of the process. And when you're nitpicking and analyzing every single thing you say in GarageBand after the fact and cutting out every little tiny thing or every and ah that your guest says, it's just, you're not spending time on the right things at this point. And so you have to sort of give that up. And so live, when you do a live Blab or a Google Hangout, it's, you don't have the ability to do that. And I love that about it. Yeah. It forces you to work through the bad radio. It forces you to just think on your toes and just to have a whatever kind of show notes you want to have to work off of, but you still have to keep a show going. And I think that that's really, really, really valuable. It was really hard for me to do it first, and it's getting easier now, but I think it like made me scale up in the level of what I can do in a non-live setting is so much, has just improved greatly based on taking like the show to a live setting as well. I really, really do think that it just makes you just give up, and like not give up, but I mean, just let go of control of how you sound and how your guest sounds, and just try and really focus on the conversation or the content or what value you're trying to provide. And once you let go of that, you don't want to grab it back because you know that it's been holding you back at that point, but it's hard to see before you let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, what it's done for me, I think, is really made me trust myself. Because, well, or it reveals that you shouldn't trust yourself, because that's the thing. When you go live, when that green light goes on, it's you and you're on, right? And even, I mean, look, you know, when I was doing the Primality Primers in the morning, I would do them every day at 6:30, do them live. The reason I did that was so that I would have to show up you know, so I would have to be there if there's that live component. And so I think that's one benefit of doing it, is that when you schedule it, when you announce it, you're going to show up for it. And so if you want to put a little external pressure on yourself to build some momentum, that's one way to do it. It's always worked for me. And I think when that light goes on, you're there and you are naked to whoever is watching. And even if there's no one watching, there's still that green light on and someone could be watching. And your knowledge, your preparation, what you have to say, it's all laid bare for everybody to see. And so if you fail when you do that, and there will probably be times if you do a live show that you maybe won't fail, but you'll struggle and it won't come off the way that you want, and you'll forget to say something that you meant to say. All of these things will inevitably happen, but you learn from them and it makes you better. But what happens over time is you really learn to trust yourself and you get better at dealing with those awkward moments, because when it's a live show, you can't just hit, hey, cut, crap, let's do that again. You can't do that. You know, it's a live show. And so it's made me so much more comfortable in non-live settings when you don't have that pressure, but you've still kind of had that training to get better in those moments. And as you go through, you know, there's a certain energy to a live show that is, I was going to say energizing, but that's lame to use the same word to describe it. But it is. It's like this kinetic feeling where anything's possible. It's like when we were doing that huddle, that blab, and 150 people showed up. It's like, okay, on the fly, we got to figure out what we're going to do now. You know, we do the live shows after the assembly call, and we, you know, we have like a minute to prepare. It's like, okay, I've got to say something good for this opening statement. You know, so you get, and it's made me, as I go through the game, you know, start preparing it in my mind and start thinking ahead. And I think you just get better at organizing thoughts in your mind and more efficient at taking them from your mind to speaking them. And that's going to make you so much better in a non-live setting when you do that, because you don't have that added pressure. And so I think, you know, there's been a lot that I've learned from doing a daily show, but I don't think anything has given me the benefit of training that doing live shows has, both for doing podcasts, for doing live speaking engagements, even just for becoming better as a conversationalist in real life, because you're going to get those benefits that go through so many different areas of your life. And so I really think if you've never done a live show, even if it's as simple as hopping on Blab and hosting a round table there, you know, doesn't need to be some new project or some grand pronouncement. You don't need to do it every day to get the benefits, but doing some live events, some live shows, it's going to be scary. You're going to struggle at it at first if you've never done it before, but you're going to learn a lot from it and you'll start to trust yourself more. And that's the beauty of it. And I think of all the lessons I've learned from these experiences, that is the main one. And I really think, you know, Johnny, when people tell us what they like about this show, they say that they like, you know, obviously that they like the information that we give and that we've helped them, you know, get unstuck with their shows and move forward and all of that. But what they really say is they like how relaxed we are, kind of the casual tone of it, how it's very conversational. And I think part of that is simply because you've done a ton of interviews and have now started doing these live shows. I've done lots of live shows, and it's allowed us to just get on here and be conversational, even when we didn't know each other back in the day when we first started doing the show. You know, now there's a little bit more rapport that plays into it, but it can really help you to do that, to just be more natural, trust yourself more in all types of recording situations when you've had that experience of doing it live.
I was nervous as heck during our first interviews. I mean, our first conversations.
Were you?
Yeah. Because I hadn't really done this format, right? And so it's something new. So your job is to try and not show that you're super, super nervous. But I mean, it's inevitable. It's inevitable in all of us. So, but then now we're at episode 30 something and it's totally great and fun and has been for a long time, but yeah, it takes a while to get used to any new sort of situation. So with Blab, say like a live environment, here's something that I recommend for everyone, because I was watching actually yesterday. I watched one by pro blogger, Darren Rouse.
Yes.
Pro blogger. He And so this is like the repurposing of content. So literally a blog post, which I've seen him do blog posts before, like older of his blog posts that he's written. It's like the 7 ways to do this with your camera. And he'll take that and literally just make it into 7 slides with like just the bullet point from each one. And then he'll talk about them and a live environment and get a completely different audience, or else go deeper with that audience that he wanted to, which is amazing. And yesterday he was doing the same thing, except this one was at the beginning. He's like, I was going to be on like CNBC or something, Australia, this television show. I'm not going to mention which one because I went there, did all the recording, and they didn't use any of it. I'm not sure why. but he's like, I didn't want all this information to go to waste because I think it's really great information. And if they don't want to publish it, I'm going to publish it myself. And so he did on Blab. And he just went through. It was like an hour and 20 minutes. I'll be honest, I didn't get through all of it. But it's had like, at that point, it had like 2,200 eyes on it, and it was like, that's pretty impressive. And he just literally had like slides with each of the points, and he just went through and talked about each one. It was like the 20 things to help you get a blog going or something. It's just something very basic. And so this whole repurposing thing, I'm not going to let up on it for any of you out there, because I know when we talk about new platforms or new strategies or anything that you can use to up your game as a showrunner, I know that the first thing that goes through your head is like, well, I already can't create enough content for my show. It's like, well, you have to change your way of thinking. That's not what has to happen. You either have a blog that has some blog posts on it, whether they're brand new or they're old, I don't care. If people haven't read those, or if every single person in your market or in the world hasn't read that blog post, which I highly doubt they have, then just talk that post out, and you don't have to read all of your words. And this is where, but you'll have a super solid structure. So if you have a blog post with the 7 reasons to do X, then you don't have to read your word verbatim. But if you have the comfort of being in a live setting and having that if you do get stuck and you don't know what to say, just start reading parts of it. It'll make you better. You'll have to do that less and less the more and more that you do these live shows. But this is just a way to get started. And know, like when you start a show, that nobody is going to be watching. Nobody's going to be listening at the beginning. And this is the best time to figure these things out, because this is when you can get comfortable. So after your 5th or 10th blab, and you start to build up, it might actually happen sooner on Blab because it's pretty quick and pretty fast moving platform right now, which is really, really cool. But you're having time to sort it out by yourself. There'll still be recordings of those and people can watch them. That's totally fine. Be cool with that. That's all right. That's just part of your bad blab you have to have in you. We all do. But just don't get stuck on thinking that now you have to also create some completely new thing to provide on a live setting. It's absolutely not true. Take something that you've created before, or else in your next episode of your show, create something that could also be used in a live sort of setting. Make it sort of structured in that way. So now you're creating one sort of main piece of content, but you're just giving it out in 2 different ways. One in your recorded setting, which you can edit the crap out of yourself as much as you want still. And then one in a live setting where you have no control over it and you just have to sort of let go. If you can do that for the next 5 or 10 or 20 episodes, you will find yourself such a better showrunner. You might not do anything with Blab or anything with that audience. That's totally not the point of that at this point. The point is to become a better showrunner and get better at sort of thinking on your feet and dealing with the internal struggle of getting through that bad radio.
Absolutely. I love that. Shall we, you got a podcast recommendation today?
Definitely do.
Let's do a podcast recommendation. So we did a few minutes of prep for this episode, Johnny, and we realized that we both listened to the same podcast episode this week and both really liked it. And it has absolutely nothing to do with podcasting, but that's okay because it was a great episode. Do you want to tell the listeners about this episode, which we both jointly recommend?
Freakonomics Radio with Stephen Dubner and Stephen Levitt. I believe so. Those are the two. Stephen Dubner's the main host. And
yes,
their most recent episode came out November 12th, so a few days ago. And the title of it is, this is obviously to the argument where people can get into about, like, do episode titles matter? Some people are like, no, it doesn't. People just get subscribed to it. But I'm subscribed to Freakonomics. They have hundreds of episodes. And I've seen ones pass. I mean, I actually didn't listen to the last 6 episodes, not because I didn't see them. They just didn't grab my attention. But the title of this one is, Should Everyone Be in a Rock Band? How could I not? Like, that's an amazing title, right?
Yeah.
So it's about this gentleman whose name I cannot recall right now, but he wrote a book on Tom Petty, like the super thorough book on Tom Petty. And he kind of played in the same circles through the 70s with Tom Petty. They actually toured together, his band, with Tom Petty.
Warren Zanes, that's his name. Warren Zanes.
Warren Zanes, there we go, yeah. So it's lessons from Tom Petty's rise and another rocker's fall. So it's two people that started out in the same place. Talks about how Tom Petty, there was all these other musicians around him at the time that were like, you could look at them and be like, that guy's going to be a star. They're going to be a star. They're going to be huge. They're going to be huge. Tom Petty, he's okay, but now he's not going to be a star. And then, of course, he's like one of the massive, most massive rock stars that there are in that arena. So, which is awesome. And so it was, yeah, it was interesting. It was really late last night. I was on my way to the airport to pick up my family, and I got to listen to it. So that's as in-depth as I get with it, but I just kept thinking, like, wow, it was cool because they're obviously selling the book, but not selling the book at all. And all I could keep thinking was, I got to get this book. I got to get this book. I got to get this book.
I agree. No, I can't wait. I do want to read it. And it's interesting because the radio station that I listen to here in Dallas, The Ticket, one of the guys, Mike Reiner, a lot of the guys on the station have music backgrounds. And he's actually the lead singer of a Tom Petty cover band. And they have the best cover band name ever. You want to hear it? Petty Theft, which is just such a great name for a Tom Petty cover band. Like, it's just perfect. And so Warren Zanes is actually, we're recording this on the 17th. He's actually going to be on the station today. And it's going to be really interesting listening to the interview, because Mike Reiner is just such a huge, I mean, he knows everything about Tom Petty. So the depths of the depth of questions and the conversation that'll happen between these two guys, I'm sure, is going to be fascinating. And I've always been a huge Tom Petty fan. And you're right. They weren't selling the book in that episode, and yet all you wanted to do is read the book. It was really well done. So I highly recommend that episode of Freakonomics, with Warren Zanes. It's excellent. And with that, I believe it's time to close up this episode, Johnny, so that you can get a sandwich.
Nice. Excellent.
That's what I picture you doing after we close down all of these episodes, even though it's in the morning that we record now. So maybe
just nonstop sandwiches over here.
Sandwiches every day, all the time.
I wish.
Well, hey, man, it's been a pleasure, and we will talk soon. And
all right, let's do it.
We need to do a call to action real quick. Folks, if you're listening to this, thank you, number one. And number two, go to showrunner.fm, join the email list, get our content series, The Four Essential Elements of a Remarkable Podcast, especially if you're new, because you need to know the pillars of our education and what we believe in. And that content series, which has dripped out over a week, will tell you all of it. So go to showrunner.fm, get on the email list, and mail Johnny a sandwich.
Yeah, I would love that. I would absolutely love that. I'm not even picky, just any kind of sandwich. I'm good.
If it's between two pieces of bread, he will take it. So get creative.
I will. Even open-faced, actually. It only needs to even be sitting on one piece of bread. I'm good.
Okay. Got it.
I'm not picky, man. Come on.
What about like those Jimmy John's lettuce wraps? You consider those sandwiches? You know, like where they kind of do like two, you know, just a little bit of lettuce, but they put all the sandwich ingredients inside. Does it have to have at least one piece of bread to be a sandwich?
Is that a real question, Jared? Jared?
No, it's not.
It's wrapped in lettuce, Jared.
It's a lettuce wrap. All right. And on that note, we are out of here. Talk to you next week.
Is it a podcast if it has no sound, Jared? Is it still a podcast if we just release blank?
Okay.
30 minutes of blankness?
Yes, technically, it's still an audio file. All right. I'm going to go have a lettuce wrap. See y'all later.
All right. Take care.